Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, on location, broadcasting about the latest on health and healing and how we can all live a longer, happier, and healthier life. Also today, we're going to take a look at Monsanto, the eyes of an investigative reporter, who asked a question. Is Monsanto's weed killer killing humans? We're also going to take a look at something most Americans didn't hear, and that was Trump should have gone to Congress for striking Syria. And that's from Senator Richard Black. Now, this is important because it's Congress that exclusively has the right to take us to war. But this has also happened in the past. People have gone without congressional support. And we're also going to talk about etiquette with the ultra-spiritual life. And if time permits, we're going to also hear from Camille Paglia on the self-destruction of the left. Many of us who grew up believing in principles of liberalism, meaning we don't forget the poor, we honor those who are serving in public service, doing a good job, not just for themselves, and we're seeing all the principles that we believed in completely usurped. So why? So we're going to look at that. I will take calls later on in the program. And for those of you who did not have a chance to hear last evening's Progressive Commentary Hour, just a brief overview, because you want to download it and listen. Go to prn.fm, go to the archives, look for the Progressive Commentary Hour, which was April the 17th. But just briefly, we had something that had not yet been shared in the United States media. The first qualified journalist, Robert Fisk, who is one of the most important, impressive journalists in the world, from The Independent, went to the hospital in Syria near the Damascus and asked there, is the video going viral and is it real? And he looked at it and said, yes, that's a real video. That's here. What about the gas attack? He said there was no gas attack, neither sarin gas nor, let's say, chlorine gas attack. Instead, he said there was very heavy bombardment in the area, terrorists and others, and that caused enormous amount of dust. And because when people hear bombing in that area, their ground to shelters or sewers, any place they can hide, the dust was so dense that it went into those areas, and the children suffocating from so much, they came to the hospital, and he personally was helping them with the inhalation. They were hosing, and so there was no gas attack. Now, this is Robert Fisk is one terrific reporter, one of the best. And he's right up there with Seymour Hirsch. So he says there was attack. Others are saying there was no gas attack. So that meant that they knew what the CIA, the National Security Agency, Homeland Security, all these ultra-secret intelligence agencies, 16 of them in the United States, plus the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the National Security Advisor, none of them seem to have known. Now, does that sound plausible to you? Does that sound like not have waited till they had proper information before launching over 100 missiles into Syria? It reeks of false flag. It reeks of opportunism. It reeks of political posturing. So that was last night, and plus we had, you would have heard last night, Edward Snowden about what's going on at the National Security Agency that has caused so many individuals to become whistleblowers, and about there's no reason for Assad to have done this. If he didn't, he didn't. And also, you got a different appearance of Assad. In fact, when the senator of Virginia visited Assad, he said he had no trouble just walking where he was and talking with him. He said it was easier to go in to meet the president of Syria than it was to get through an airport security check. And then it turns out, I didn't know this, that Assad drives himself to work each day, and his wife takes their kids and walks them to school, and that there is no presidential palace. Instead, he and his family have a regular apartment in a regular complex, and even one of the neighbors, a lawyer, was saying, yeah, the president and his family are here. Three apartments down, living normal. Is this the picture of dictators and tyrants, the acts of evil that have to be destroyed and killed? So you see, just like with Gaddafi, and on numerous occasions, doing my homework, looking at the entire historical record of Gaddafi and Libya, I've told you repeatedly, Libya did not represent a threat. In fact, it was the most prosperous country in Africa. It was leading the effort for financial independence away from Saudi Arabia, the United States, and other countries, and gold and currency. And that's why he was taken out, that and crude oil. But his entire country was destroyed on lies. Syria has been destroyed on lies. And making these people seem evil so that we can then say, yes, replace him, that's the power of propaganda. So there'll be more on this, a lot more. And the good news is, and this is the good news, that Trump overreacts with everything, and each time he does something really foolish, his own base begins to see this. So every time he does something this stupid and calmer heads prevail in Russia and other countries not to respond, then it means it's less likely he will be the president in 2020, and probably Bernie Sanders will. Now, we've got a lot to share with you today, so let's begin. Always on Health and Healing. This is from the Journal of the American Medical Association, and it talks about hypertension. Now, we know that hypertension is the silent killer, and if uncontrolled, it will cause a higher risk of a heart attack and stroke. Now, people can use drugs, and those drugs can lower your blood pressure, but in the process, they shorten your lifespan instead of extending it. But there's another way of doing it, and that is, first look at how garlic and onions and shallots and proper exercise and de-stressing and getting off a meat-based diet and high-fat diet and getting on a lower-fat but healthier-fat plant-based diet and looking at things like coenzyme Q10 and potassium diet and green juices can lower the blood pressure, thin the blood, and help prevent high blood pressure. I've done two clinical studies with large numbers of people. These were not medical studies. These were lifestyle and behavior intervention studies where people still stayed with their doctor, but they their lifestyle, and over a period of 3 months, was able to completely get off blood pressure medication. It was normalized. Their doctors took them off. So here's what the Journal of the American Medical Association is saying. That they're saying just doing the drugs can also backfire on you. As individuals 50 and up, they're also getting diagnosed not just with high blood pressure, but frequently diabetes and coronary artery disease. And the standard hypertension guide for diabetics suggests me you're 130 mmHg. But there's little data on the growing diabetics who also have a CAD or coronary artery disease. And there was a study on all this, and it just showed that if you're making lifestyle changes. If you're just relying upon beta or A's, then some combination, you're going to end up risking your health. So we have too many people with high blood pressure. We have too many people not eating correctly. Many people taking the drugs. And that is a prescription for disaster. The oils in your diet should be cold-pressed olive oil, coconut oils, and flax. Those are your healing oils. Also having raw nuts, almonds, pecans, avocados, that's a really good thing. Each day if you have high blood pressure is to have a handful of pecans and also some avocados. Separately, from Natural Systems, Mike Barrett, I was taking a look at the chemical analysis of pecan, the nut. And in just 28 grams, which is 1 ounce, one single ounce, you're getting over 2.5 grams of high-quality protein. You're also getting grams of high-quality fatty acids, plus a lot of proteins, xanthan, copper, manganese, fiber, magnesium, phosphorus, iron, lots of nutrients. So I wanted to go further, so I looked in pecan, which you never hear about. You live in the South. And I compared it to walnuts and almonds. And what I found was that a handful of pecans each day is going to give you about 279 milligrams of the omega-3 fatty acids and about 5,800 milligrams of the omega-6 fatty acids. That's in a single ounce. But it's going to promote good digestion. It's going to relieve constipation. Why? Because high-quality fiber is essential for promoting colon health and paving the way to have a regular bowel movement. And the fiber found in pecans helps to clean out the gastrointestinal system, allowing your colon to work at greater levels of efficiency. It also boosts your heart health. Why? Because we know that fiber is good for the heart. In fact, the FDA has even approved health claims relating to fiber's ability to reduce the risk of coronary heart disease and the risk of prevention of some kinds of cancers. So pecans contain heart-friendly monounsaturated fatties, acids like oleic acid, along with phenolic antioxidants. And both of these substances prevent coronary artery disease and strokes. There was an article published on this Nutrition Review. Pecans specifically help prevent coronary heart disease by inhibiting unwanted oxidation of blood lipids. It also promotes bone and teeth health. It prevents muscle soreness. Now, after calcium, phosphorus is the most abundant mineral in the world, about 85% of it being found in bone and teeth. Well, the other 15% can be found in the cells and tissues. And what's important is the mineral is essential tissues along with the production of DNA and RNA. But phosphorus helps prevent muscle pain following exercise. And so pecans are good in phosphorus. It's inflammatory because it's rich in magnesium, and magnesium is a known anti-inflammatory. And it's really good for you on all levels. It reduces the risk of stroke. What I was just referring to, there are 7 separate studies that I found that over a 14-year period found stroke risk was reduced substantially with just 100 milligrams of magnesium a person consumes per day. And that was in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, and you do that in pecans. And it also reduces breast cancer risk. So those are just some of the things that pecans do. So let's just summarize. Having a handful of pecans each day helps reduce blood pressure, reduce stroke risk, promotes bone health, promotes health, preventing muscle soreness following exercise, helps the body get rid of waste in the kidneys, reduces inflammation, helping your cells and tissues grow and repair, boosting heart health, reducing heart disease risk, promoting good digestion, building muscle, aiding in muscle recovery, preventing breast cancer, and reducing cancer risk. Whoa. Now, let's start eating more pecans. But let's not forget to eat those green leafy vegetables. Why? Because according to the latest studies on this, and a research team led by Walter and Elizabeth Hill, the Institute's Molecular Immunology Division down in Australia, they found that leafy greens, kale, chard, arugula, all right, these are what we're talking about, influence gene expression and boost your native immune response to fight all diseases. Our native immune system works on our behalf 24/7. So no matter how hot or cold or how dirty the environment we're in, it's helping protect us from negative lifestyle factors. If you're around household toxins or stress and not a perfect diet, then up to 80% of our initial immune response takes place in our digestive system. And the body uses cues from what we eat to activate essential actions of to potential invaders. But when we're eating all these processed foods that have no nutrients or flavonoids, it dulls our immune system and dramatically increases our risk of infection and inflammatory disease. But your green vegetables and your cruciferous vegetables, that's your broccoli, cauliflower, kale, mustard, radishes, that works by stimulating genes to boost your innate immune response. Now, we have a special type of immune cell known as the innate lymphoid cell, and is found throughout the digestive tract and can help protect the body from invading pathogens and also provides a balance between good and bad bacteria in the intestine. So when you have your glass of juice each day, you're going to end up with a stronger immune response, and that's a good thing. That helps prevent disease. And also, where mushrooms and soybeans combined have a therapeutic effect on prostate cancer. This is the University of California data, and that's good. And this is published in Endocrine-Related Cancer, that a natural non-toxin polysaccharides and food stores, you can buy mushrooms and you combine the soy genistein, then men with prostate cancer that has spread through the body, known as metastatic cancer, and had their testosterone lowering by a drug therapy, likely to benefit. So, lowering of testosterone, also known as an androgen deprivation therapy, has long been the standard of care for patients with metastatic prostate cancer. But life expectancies vary widely for those who undergo this treatment. Just remember, testosterone is an androgen, the generic term for any compound that stimulates or controls development and maintenance of male characteristics, pointing to androgen receptors. And the current findings hold promise to life and androgen deprivation therapy. So, and mushrooms, sir. Also, papaya could help combat many of the world's leading diseases. There was an article in the Times of India, and a group of students from the University of Karachi has explored health benefits of papaya and discovered facts about the delicious tropical fruit, including its usage in lowering chances of heart disease and controlling diabetes. Now, most people don't eat papaya. And if you do, let it get a little orange, a little yellow orange. So it just kind of, if you put your thumb on it, it gently makes an impression. That means it's, then cut off a piece. And then take it, scoop out the skin, pulverize the skin. You can give it to animals. It's very, in a blend for them. It's rich in carotenoids. And then take this and the flesh. Both the seeds are great for turning off inflammation and good digestion. They're loaded in enzymes, and the fruit is good for blood pressure, helping with parasites. It's terrific on those. And finally, elderberries, one of my favorites. I believe that elderberries should be used every day. Elderberry syrup, elderberry concentrate, elderberry powder. It's just one of the ways in the world. But elderberries are found in America and Europe. And in fact, Hippocrates was big on elderberries because what he... In fact, elderberries have been used against the flu and for all the people with AIDS-defining illness or HIV infection. I always recommend a full glass of elderberry concentrate juice each day, loaded with tannins, carotenoids, vitamin C, of fiberuric acid, and lectins. And these berries have been used many years as a folk remedy for illness and conditions of the immune response. So from tonsillitis to diabetes, from asthma to yeast infections to viral infections, chest and nasal congestion, constipation, elderberry extract. It even helps prevent cardiovascular disease by reducing the LDL cholesterol in the blood. And it has what are called antho, A-N-T-H-O, cyanidins, C-Y-A-N-I-N-S, one of the most powerful antioxidants known and are found in these remarkable berries in high quantities. And their juice is known to help vision and improve digestion. So make sure that you get your elderberry on a regular basis. That's the latest health and healing. We're 21 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. Welcome all of you to the program. I'm Gary Nall. We have four separate audio clips we're going to be playing for you in just a moment. I just want to take a moment, however, and let you know that we have today back in inventory a product that's very good for you. I'm going to let you know what that is in a moment. I just want to make sure with my staff that we have it? Yeah, I've just told we do have it. Good. We've been out of it. It's memory stuff. Wow. What could that possibly be? Well, all in all natural, this proprietary blend, based upon people come to me saying, Gary, what would you do for? Can you do this? As we can do, but you have to feed the body what it needs. In here, I put it. From brown rice, a flaxseed, acetyl L-carnitine, that's a superstar, green tea extract with 98% polyphenols, that's a superstar, glycerol phosphoryl choline, that's a tongue twister, but the glycerol phosphoryl choline, cacao, alpha lipoic acid, quercetin, rosemary, Siberian ginseng, ginkgo biloba, pantothenic acid, vitamin B1, calcium and magnesium from citrate, also stevia, chocolate flavor, lecithin, and guar. And that's it. It is vegan. It is non-GMO. And I generally have people tell me that within about 2 they began to notice a difference. Memory stuff tastes delicious, and you take it. If you're taking other powders, and I do, I just throw a teaspoon in there or scoop this in the jar. So, you know, the bad part of getting older, one of the things of getting older, is that sometimes we forget so easily, especially short-term memory. People don't really have to feed the brain. You have to feed the heart. You have to feed the lungs and the muscles. You have to feed the eyes. And we don't. That's just not a part of our mindset. So what I do when I create a product, when I create something that's natural and beneficial to the body, I first ask, is there a need for this? Would people benefit from it? And then I use the science in nutrition to create a product. It generally takes about a year to create a single product and hope that the public appreciates it. I make them in very small batches. This is only 500 jars. That's all I make. Companies generally make 20, 50, 100,000 jars, a million jars. I don't. I just do this for the audience. So now you have it back in inventory. It was out, and we've been out of it for a while. As of today, memory stuff is back at a great price, too. Getting a discount on this. Call this number, 877-627-5065. Again, 877-627-5065. Memory stuff. It's regularly $78. It's regularly $98, and you're getting it for $77. Call 877-627-5065 for memory stuff, and I'll bet probably 90% of the audience would benefit from it. Now, we're going to do an audio clip now, and this is from Camille Pagna. She's a professor. She is a feminist, but she's not like other feminists. She believes that there should be peace and harmony between men and women. She does not believe we should be demasculinizing young boys. She believes that being rambunctious and curious and adventurous is a normal part of what it is to be a little boy. And she also acknowledges that there are differences in hormones, there's difference in qualities, characteristics, and mannerisms between men and women. It's equality for men and women. Well, the person doesn't. She doesn't believe in conflicts, and she doesn't believe that just hating on men, which is politically popular, is the way you're going to resolve any of the conflict. Here's what she has to do.
I wanted to ask Phyllis Schlafly, I don't know if you remember her, she died last year. Yes. I wanted to know if you think the true embodiment of the feminist lifestyle is coming from conservative pundits like Ann Coulter and even Kellyanne Conway.
All right, wait, you're asking me if I think the true feminism? Is that what you're saying?
The feminist lifestyle, not being pro-choice, but that kind of, rogue feminist lifestyle is being embodied by women by like Ann Coulter or Kellyanne Conway.
It's absolutely, the case that Ann Coulter, because she's a conservative, has not received any credit for having, being a highly successful, career woman. I mean, that's absolutely true. I mean, Kellyanne, I don't want to really get into it too much, but, this is the first woman, who's ever managed a successful campaign, her candidate got to the White House. So she deserves much more credit than she's gotten. I mean, I don't understand why there's like an endless kind of strafing of her, that's going on in the media. I'm not, obviously it's like the media is extremely biased. But about Phyllis Schlafly, however. All right, now there is a woman actually also, she was a conservative woman, she was a lawyer, she had six children and something, okay? She was a homemaker and a professional woman, and she went out there to oppose, the Equal Rights, the ERA, the Equal Rights Amendment, which was passed by Congress and then had to go from, state legislature to state legislature, and finally it didn't reach the number and had to be abandoned after a certain point. But Phyllis Schlafly is very influential in American history because she's the one who laid the groundwork, actually. Her grassroots organizing laid the groundwork for the resurgence of American conservatism. Okay, fair account of achieving women would have to include her. Now, Ann Coulter is a little more controversial because she's like a topical writer. She turns out these books, but she's terrific as a combatant. She's fierce, as a combatant. I have quite, just as a person who writes books. I write a book every 5 years. Okay, she turns these books out. and I don't think there's enough research in them. I think she would be taken more seriously if she would actually do heavier research. For example, she wrote a book a number of years ago about the bias of the New York Times. Okay, that was actually a perfect moment for people to start realizing what's going on in Manhattan media. Okay, that was like some years ago now, maybe it was even 10 years ago. Right, and so I'd heard about that she was doing this book, and I thought, well, this is exactly what's needed. And then when I actually saw it, I thought, gee, this is so weak because there's so much evidence about her thesis, and she didn't do it. There's no doubt that people go after her because she's, because of her political beliefs. In general, it's obvious, okay? And the conservatives get strafed. I mean, it is absolutely scandalous the way the Manhattan media have veered toward. It's like it's amateurish also. It's like tediously, obvious, there was a time. It's hard to believe there was a time. When I was teaching at Bennington in Vermont, where and this was the 1970s, where I would not miss an issue of the New York Times. I would go to the country store every day, okay, and buy a copy, and they would pile up sometimes for a couple of months, okay. I would read every single issue, okay, because the reporting was of the highest level. The language, was very grave, and it had a certain kind of distinct, Times style and so on. But the quality of the writing, everything about it, it is tragic, okay, the destruction, self-destruction. Of the New York Times right now. I mean, just reading the headlines of the op-ed page, it's like, oh, what is it? This is a college newspaper? What's happened to it? All right. Actually, another major law, The Village Voice. Hello? Okay. The Village Voice. I subscribe to that, okay, The Village Voice, from like my first year of graduate school all the way, which would have been like 1968, all the way to the mid-1980s. Okay. I read The Village Voice from cover to cover. I am so influenced by The Village Voice, okay, in its great period. I was even reading the hair salon ads. I mean, every single thing. Okay, so, all right. But by the mid '80s, interestingly, okay, I stopped subscribing. Okay, and I didn't know why. It just felt like bland. I didn't know what was going on. Okay, in the mid 1980s, I stopped. All right. What I didn't know was the horrible toxic tide of PC had taken over New York, okay, and had reached the Village Voice, okay? So when I suddenly burst on the scene in 1990, 1981, okay, the Village Voice suddenly has me pilloried on the cover story, okay, with conservative, people, wanted for intellectual fraud. It was like, I was being classified as a conservative. At my arrival on the scene, in the 1988 Democratic primary, I had just voted for Jesse Jackson, okay? That's how delusional the Village Voice was, okay? I mean, those worthless people who let the Village Voice, okay, go into that dead decrepitude, they should be arrested, I'm telling you, and in charge, okay, with vandalism, okay, profanation of a major cultural resource in this country. The Village Voice in its heyday was magnificent. Now Hentoff was talking about free speech, okay, and Andrew Sears' reviews of movies were like fabulous. Jill Johnston, okay, was like a dance critic who turned into like this feminist, and like she was like a performer. Performance artists and so on. Oh my God! Okay, it's all gone. All gone. Why? Why? Okay, what's happened to New York? Why? Okay, I want to return to that. The credible variety of voices that once came out of the left. Once huge variety of voices. Now no more. Now one voice. Okay, racism, sexism, homophobia, slogans. Okay, endless slogans, endless loaded language. Okay, and what happened to the art? Okay, when was the last? When there used to be New York was a seething. That period when Steve Paxton, all that stuff happening downtown, okay, as dance was slowly evolving, into movement, okay, and as music was evolving into sound and all that, it was like, oh, this was like such a capital. I shouldn't blame New York because look what's happened to Paris, okay, and so, all right, I mean, there was a great period there in Paris, following World War II, the movies that used to be made, oh my Lord, Jean Moreau, the masterpieces came out of European cinema, and all that was gone, by the 1970s. So we're in a terrible kind of cultural vacuum right now. Okay, but wait, I have to stop. I'm digressing. I can tell.
Okay, that is Camille Paglia. She speaks a mile a minute, fastest person I've ever heard talking. But listen carefully to what she says. That there was a time from the 1960s until probably the mid-1980s when New York, the media, was having some of the most profound voices for progressivism and building the humanities and uncovering and exploring the potential of the human condition. And today, that's all gone. It's just gone. I also don't read the New York Times anymore for the same reasons, because it's so biased. And you have all these radicalized ideologues supporting a Democratic Party that is utterly corrupt. And these are very bright people. Those who condemn the media for being sophomoric or juvenile, it's not true. These are some of the brightest minds in the country, but they have engaged in supporting a completely corrupt and venile corporate Democratic Party that represent Wall Street and the pharmaceutical industry and the war complex. They're behind all the wars. They're behind all the invasions. They're behind all this. All they do is bang the drums. It wasn't just Judith Miller banging the drums that got America to go into Iraq and kill all those people. They're doing it now, protecting Clinton. Long ago, they should have given up on that and looked to more progressive idealists. They once had a great progressive, Chris Hedges. He doesn't work there anymore. No, the good journalist, as far as doing good journalism that is honest, you don't find it. Now we're going to hear from another person. I've got four topics I want to cover now. And this is why Donald Trump did not go to Congress as he should have before striking Iraq. Whether Iraq did or did not do anything wrong, he should have gone to Congress. And since when do we not have the patience to wait until the independent inspectors go in and see the actual results so they can say, our investigation concluded that this is what happened. Then you make your mind up what you want to do, and you measure that response based on what the evidence shows. We had no evidence, none. The only evidence coming out was from the White Helmets, a known and proven terrorist organization that we support. And where are the reporters of the New York Times and CNN and the Wall Street Journal and Washington Post? Where are they doing the stories about America supporting terrorism? Where are they at? Well, they're nowhere to be found. So here is a congressman, State Senator Richard Black, talking about his opinion on the subject of Trump not wanting to get congressional support before he struck Russia or Syria.
The British Premier sought approval from lawmakers before launching the combined assault on Syria. A number of Republican senators have hit out at Donald Trump's decision, saying that he should have consulted Congress first.
I haven't read France's or Britain's constitution, but I've read ours, and nowhere in it is presidential authority to strike Syria.
The president needs congressional authorization for military action, as required by the Constitution.
Airstrikes are an act of war. Atrocities in Syria cannot justify departure from Constitution, which vests in Congress power to commence war.
Well, one of those Republican senators condemning the U.S., British and French operation is Richard Black, delighted to say, joins us now. Hi, Richard. Yeah, you must have watched what happened last night with some dismay. First off, why didn't President Trump go to Congress to get that approval then?
I think it was very clear from what happened under President Obama that the Congress would not. Once the people had an opportunity to have a voice, there is no way that they would have approved an attack on Syria.
So it was enough to go together, as President Trump put it. He said he went with the allies together and they marshaled their righteous power. That was enough to go to war last night. Was it like that?
Well, you know, the odd thing is that we do not know whether chemicals were used or whether this was just a fabrication. And if they were used, we have no earthly idea who used them. But we do know just logically, there was no motive whatsoever for Syria to do it. First of all, they had conquered Jaish al-Islam in Douma. and they were already shipping them out on buses. Jaish al-Islam had burned their own tanks. They were shredding documents and so forth. They were leaving. They were finished. The war was, the battle for Douma was over. And so the idea that at that precise point, gas would be fired is childishly absurd.
What about Theresa May from the UK point of view? Why do you think she didn't seek parliamentary approval in the UK? Bit like Trump. Do you think she wouldn't have got it or what?
Well, if you recall, under President Obama, the Prime Minister did go to the legislature and they was rebuffed and they refused to go in. And so that caused us, it had a reverberating effect on the United States. And at that point, we simply withdrew and we never did have a vote in Congress because we knew we were going to lose once the people had the opportunity to voice their opinion.
How, as I was saying to our guest earlier on, there must be a huge degree of confidence in Washington, in the UK, in France. I mean, President Macron says he has the absolute proof, although we've still not seen what that actually is. There must be a huge amount of confidence. They're 110% right here.
Well, they don't have any confidence. What they have is they have the power to simply attack countries. They had complete confidence when they went into Iraq because there were weapons of mass destruction that never existed. They always have complete confidence, but they never have proof. And you could never, if you tried to prosecute Syria for this in a legitimate court of law, you could never get a conviction. I will tell you, I'm a prosecutor, and you would never get a conviction of Syria for what happened.
And, of course, this happened on the eve of those OPCW investigators carrying out their work there. That was supposed to be, well, this morning, and this happened just a couple of hours before it. Could that in any way affect the progress of their work? Could it knock it back? What happened now?
Well, I think it was clear that the United States did not want to have organization send in chemical investigators, and they wanted to get this attack over before they ran the risk that the investigators would go in and say either there never was an attack or that it was staged by the terrorists. There is actually a third possibility. Chlorine is one of the 10 most common industrial chemicals. Water purification is carried out by chlorine. Yeah. Many industrial functions are. And so anytime that you have mass combat in an urban setting, there is always a possibility that there will be a chlorine release that is not the fault of anyone. It just simply happens. Mm. But it's clear that Syria did not deliberately attack because there was no motive. So, if there's no motive, there's no crime.
So looking on from where you are, what was gained from last night? Missiles were fired off. It depends who you listen to. Russia and Syria say the majority of them actually were intercepted. We hear that there were three areas that were hit. But what was achieved?
I think the good news is that the attacks were very focused and limited. I think to some extent that the president, through some of his tweets, had boxed himself into a corner, and he was forced to do something. Fortunately, I think he chose the best option that he could, which was a very limited attack.
Mm. And is it a one-off? Because we're hearing the guns are still, quote, locked and loaded if Syria were to do anything like this again, in their view. Is it going to die down for now? What do you think is going to happen next, then?
Well, you know, when you make that type of announcement to the terrorist, you simply send a signal to them, stage another provocation, stage another hoax. And you've got the white helmets who are affiliated with Al-Qaeda, and their purpose is to stage propaganda attacks. And so you really have just invited another propaganda attack by them. And I think it's unfortunate. You know, there are two sides in this war. There's the Syrians and their allies. There are the terrorists and their allies.
Why is there so much confusion? Why is there so much confusion, as you said, about these guys, the white helmets? On one side, they're painted as heroes, humanitarian heroes. On others, Russia is saying, in fact, the one theory out yesterday was the fact they were being highly pressured to do this earlier on this month and being pushed by the UK to do it. Why is there so much confusion over who these people actually are on either side?
Well, there's a tremendous amount of financing that goes to the white helmets. To create this propaganda organization.
So are they the good guys?
Oh, absolutely not. No. These are Al Qaeda. They fight, and then when there's a propaganda hoax to be staged, they throw on a white hat and they run around and pretend that they're picking up children. Some they've been caught different times. In fact, they were caught once. Pulling a mannequin out from under rubble and pretending that it was a victim of an attack. So
who's doing their PR then? Who's selling them as the good guys?
Well, the West is doing it because it falls into line with the propaganda. And, you know, there's been enormous propaganda through all the years of this war directed at Syria. And, of course, Syria doesn't have the wealth and the power over the media to counteract it. So you have people like me and others who simply have a voice and they study what's going on and they understand the truth. And so they disclose the truth.
So there you have at least one reasonable voice, but there are many more who are not able to get on the media. That was an RT. But you wouldn't hear that person on CNN. They'd be cut off. Or on the BBC. In fact, when someone tried to talk about what was going on in Syria, legitimately, they were cut off. Now, the reporter made an interesting statement. Well, who should we believe? Do your homework. You're a reporter. You can look at the articles written about the White Helmet, the people who have investigated the White Helmet, showing who they are, who finances the man who put all this together, the hundreds of millions of dollars the United States has given him, the thousands of people work at the Pentagon every single day doing nothing but propaganda. The largest single public relations outfit in the world is the Pentagon. They have more employees, paid and unlimited budgets, and access to other plants in the media who are supportive of, directly or paid by, secretly the CIA to disseminate misinformation or the official position. Your thoughts. Time for Talk Back. Give us a call, 888-874-4888. I want to save a little time for you to have a chance to share your points of view on any of the things we've covered. 888-874-4888. And while you're doing that, I'll play one more clip, and when I get calls in, I'll cut from the clip and go to you. And this is about phone etiquette from the ultra-spiritual guy.
This is a special announcement. I don't want you to fall prey to lousy phone etiquette and suffer from social embarrassment. So I've documented for you the unwritten rules about proper phone etiquette in 2018. Text before you call. It's a violation when you call someone without texting first to let them know you're going to call, and you're clearly confused about what a phone is for if you think you can just call someone on it. You wouldn't just walk through someone's front door without knocking first. So have some respect and text before you call. Silence your ringer in public. Do you know what a first-degree phone felony is? Having your ringer on in public. It's not 1999 anymore, where you having a ringing phone in public means you're an important person. In 2018, it means you're so unimportant that you rarely get calls and therefore haven't had a chance to catch on to the fact that your ringing phone is auditorily obnoxious to everyone but you. So keep your ringer off. It's worse than secondhand smoke. Never proofread speech to text conversion. The best minds in IT make it possible for you to convert your speech into written text with an impressive 11% accuracy rate. While they've yet to develop a higher rate of accuracy, you've yet to develop the ability to proofread your text before you send them, as it should be. Just six cucumbers would be awesome, period. Trying to decipher what your text is actually trying to say is a mental challenge the other person always enjoys. Use the speakerphone when talking to someone you don't like. The speakerphone is a function designed by engineers to frustrate the person you're talking to by inundating them with an abrasive orchestra comprised of 47% background noise, 35% eardrum-piercing sounds like cars going by, and 18% your voice. Decline calls carefully. When a phone etiquette offender does call you without texting first, you're obviously going to decline the call. But how you decline the call makes all the difference. Do not press the red decline button. If you do, then they'll know you sent them straight to voicemail and that you don't want to talk to them. Instead, do a single click of your sleep button. Your phone stops ringing on your end, but it keeps ringing on their end. They'll be left thinking that you didn't just reject them, and you'll be left wearing the crown of phone-based psychological manipulation. Talk at a normal volume. If you start talking on the phone and automatically double the volume of your voice, the only thing you're helping is everyone around you realize how ignorant you are. You may not realize this, but the exact reason why you don't need to yell for the other person to hear you is because you're talking to them on a phone. Because you obviously didn't get an advanced degree in awareness, it'll help you to know that with today's phones, the other person can hear you better than if you were talking to them in person. So quiet down. Leave voice texts, not voicemails. There's no way in hell anybody's going to check a voicemail you leave. It's too inconvenient. It shows up in a part of their phone that might as well be 1,000 miles away. It's just rude to leave one. Instead, send them a voice message via text. They'll be happy to listen to it because it's completely different. And then they'll probably resent you because it's too long. Use your phone to avoid eye contact. When you're having a conversation with someone in person, it's important to avoid looking them in the eyes. There's a reason why wild animals will attack you if you hold eye contact with them. It's because it's rude. Instead, to be more polite, take your phone out and look at it while you're talking to them. It becomes a convenient tool to help you avoid breaking the biggest social taboo of looking someone in the eyes. Always message about messages. Because email falls outside the sphere of social media, some people aren't super vigilant about it anymore. So when you do send someone an email, if they don't reply within 15 minutes, send them a text to let them know about the email you sent. And if they don't respond to your text within 5 minutes, send them a message on Facebook to let them know about the text you sent, letting them know about the email you sent. And if they don't respond to your Facebook message within 1 minute, send them another email, this time accusing them of intentionally ignoring you. And then send them a text to let them know about the second email you just sent. People love receiving your messages, letting them know about other messages you've sent. As you can see, phone etiquette in 2018 is pretty straightforward. That's all you need to know to be a respectable member of society.
Let's go over now and say hello to Kevin from Brooklyn. Hi, Kevin. You're on
the air. Hey, Gary. How you doing, Gary?
Good.
So a couple quick questions regarding the recent developments in Syria. First of all, like we can all remember from back in Iraq, the role that Halliburton played and the economic interest that was pretty directly linked with Dick Cheney, who coincidentally also has a role on the advisory board of Genie Energy, as well as the Rothschild family and Larry Summers, Bill Richardson. So I'm wondering if you have any information about the role that Genie Energy plays economically in terms of controlling the fossil fuels in Golan Heights, and also what role, if any, international laws are playing in these developments, if and when it's exposed, as it basically already has, that this was all a complete fabrication, a complete false flag. When that is, if, as if it could be any more clear, how, what vehicles are in place to hold the U.S. and Israel and Saudi Arabia accountable?
None. There are no international laws that the United States recognizes. We do not recognize the Geneva Convention. We do not recognize the International Criminal Court. We do not recognize a single law anywhere in the world, nor in any country where any of our forces are. And we're in over 120 countries of the world with boots on the ground. We have just today, we have troops, a large troop development on the border of Syria. That is posturing. We are in a sovereign country. We were not invited in. In fact, to the contrary, when Obama and his national security team knew and had absolute hard prima facie evidence that Turkey and the Turkey's president's son, Erdogan's son, was having convoys of trucks, up to 12,000 trucks, going into Syria in rebel-held territory. Now imagine that. How would you be able to know that your trucks would not be sabotaged, sold, and then confiscated, then sold for a ransom? These are expensive trucks. But none were dealt with. They were in enemy territory, ISIS territory, and they were stealing Syria's oil and then taking it back. And they also did the same thing in Iraq and took it back into Turkey and then sold it on the black market for, I believe it was around $20 a barrel when it was going for around $70 a barrel otherwise. And they also then, where the America was fully aware that Turkey was training and abetting terrorist groups. They even had hospitals right across the Turkish border, so any of the ISIS, al-Nusra, al-Qaeda that was being hurt in Syria could then go into Turkey, a NATO nation, and as a result, the NATO partners work together and be taken care of, as well as also in Israel, and then go back into the battle. So it was only when Russia got involved that Russia began to bomb the trucks and stop the flow of oil, which stopped about up to $4 million a day from getting into ISIS's hands. Because no one asked, how does ISIS have an entire army with all of the weapons? Where did they come from? Who paid for them? Where was their money source? America also knew, and Obama and Clinton knew, that Saudi Arabia was the largest provider of money for the terrorists in the world. And they have terrorists who graduate from their madras schools. They have the largest number of madras schools teaching young, mainly young boys, about Wahhabism, the most radical aspect of Islam. The rest of Islam doesn't begin to look at the people and others the way that Wahhabism does, and that's strictly a Sunni faction and propagated out of Saudi Arabia. And so instead of challenging Saudi Arabia for sponsoring terrorism and even being a part of the 9/11, we hid that. George Bush hid it in the 28 pages, which were actually 58,000 pages in FBI headquarters, because the Bush connections, the Bush family with the House of Saud. In addition to that, it was Russia that began to take the war to ISIS, and then we got our nose bent out of shape because Russia was then bombing camps that had ISIS in it, which they were our and John McCain's, you know, friends. And so we got angry. And the media continued to parrot the idea that Russia is bombing, you know, people who are fighting terrorism. No, Russia was bombing terrorists, not the Assad. So the United States did the only thing it could. It began to bomb Syria and bomb Syrian troops. Now, just a few weeks ago, over 200 Russians were killed. Now, if 200 Americans were killed, I can assure you that would be a big issue. Russia let it go because it knew the consequences of an armed conflict with the United States. And it warned, don't do this again. So that is where we stand. The real people who cleansed out the terrorist is Russia. But the United States is now occupying a foreign sovereign nation. That is an act of war in and of itself. It has thrown missiles into a country twice. That is an act of war itself. But when you are an imperial power, which we are, you're beholden to no laws, no rules, no etiquette anywhere. And that's what we've done. And we've done that since, oh my goodness, let's see, 82 times in our history, with no consequence whatsoever. Want a consequence? Go to the Philippines and see how many Filipinos died when we wanted to take over the Philippines, or Haiti, or any of the other countries that we did this. Panama, we're good at this. And yet the liberal press will never report on this if the people in power are themselves the standard bearers of corporate democratic so-called liberal principles. These are not liberal. These are neoliberal and hence neo-fascist principles. And yes, you are correct. There is a corporation in the Golan Heights, which is Syria, that, but it's not under Syrian control. It's under Israeli control, that has had major oil exploration and great oil reserves there, so it's going to exploit it for its needs. And that element of the calculus is kept out of the news completely. Okay, thank you very much, Kevin, for your time. I appreciate it. So everyone, thank you all for listening in today, and I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.